You are listening to Alpha Geek Radio.
The following is a production of Galactic Netcasts.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It's Thursday, October 22nd, 2015. Welcome to the Alien Invasion, number 162, a production of Galactic Netcasts. My name's Dave Nelson. Joining me, as always, for the past 1,000 years. It hasn't been 1,000 years.
More like 4, probably.
Yeah. I think you're closer to the actual number, Brad. There's Brad Ludwig alongside Anessa Moyens. How are you two doing?
Doing all right.
Doing all right.
Anything fantastic happened in the last week since we talked on the previous episode?
Oh, we put together our Lego Dimensions set.
Ooh. Explain some more. Tell me more. Tell me more.
Did we get very far? Yes, we did, Dave. We actually finished the project, since you asked in a roundabout way, using musical lyrics from Greece. Lego Dimensions. Basically, Lego has a lot of different licensing rights to do sets based on TV, movies, and things like that. And what they ended up doing, because they had such great success with their Lego games, you know, like Indiana Jones series, the Star Wars series, they decided to start to flex their muscle with their licensing that they have. And they actually created a set kind of like Skylanders. Now, Skylander is you purchase characters and you can set them on this this base. And it has a little RF sensor, RFDI sensor, RFID, sorry. And it says what the thing is and what it can do. So Lego did something like that. So with the base set that you get, you build the base that you end up using. And you get Batman. You get Gandalf from The Hobbit. And then you get Wildside, who is from the Lego movie. And those are your three characters you start out with, but they have sets for The Wizard of Oz. They have sets for DC Comics. They have sets for Back to the Future. So we built the base set, got the portal thing all set up, and we have yet to play it yet, but it is finally completed.
Well, so, for those of us that don't know, how do you play the game?
We haven't played it yet, but essentially what it is, you build your little Lego character, be it Batman or whoever, Marty McFly, and then you you use the, like, we're using an Xbox 360, right? Mm-hmm. So it comes with a CD, or actually DVD, of the game, and you drop it in, and then it interacts with the base that you built and the little Lego characters that you put together, and those characters represent the characters that you would play in the game.
Doesn't Disney have something similar?
Yes, they do. Infinity.
Okay, that's what it is.
Yep.
Well, neat.
So it's along the same lines as Infinity, as in Skylander, and I think there's a couple other products out there too. This is going to be wildly successful, because you'll have the opportunity to, if you're playing a two-player game, you could have, we were joking, because you could buy the Jurassic World set, and you could buy, what's the other one? You could buy the Lego movie set and get Emmett. Both are, Emmett was done, was voiced by Chris Pratt, and Chris Pratt has a character in Jurassic World. So you could actually have two people playing Chris Pratt. He voiced both of those characters. That's the other thing too, is they got, for the Back to the Future stuff, they actually got Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd to come in and do new audio. There's going to be a Doctor Who set next month, and that was voiced by Jenna Coleman and Peter Capaldi. And then you have the ability to play previous doctors. And with the previous doctors, they just snipped out audio that the BBC gave them for, so you could play Tom Baker and have it use Tom Baker's words, but it's snipped out from other episodes.
That sounds like a lot of money going to Lego here very soon for you guys. It's already happening.
Yeah, the base set was like $100.
Okay. Wow.
But then all the other sets vary in price from like 15 to 30.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Sounds like fun. Good luck with that.
It's going to be a nice family game, I think, for us to play.
I expect a report later on down the line.
Oh, you'll get one, mister.
Okay. Hey, let's talk about aliens. This is why we are here, to talk about extraterrestrials and their appearances in film, TV, video games, comic books, science, and in real life. The show is, it's got three sections going on there. You got the news, you got the sightings feature, and our picks for the week. And if you ever want to watch us do the show live, follow Galactic Netcasts. That's our main network on Twitter, Facebook, Google+. We'll let you know when we're going live. Sometimes you'll see it pop up and we won't go live for like 10 minutes. So just be patient, all right? Or avoid all that by watching us later at our YouTube channel, youtube.com/GalacticNetcasts. So without further ado, let's start the news.
In the news.
Lots of good stuff this week, and Brad has the first story.
I do. I need to get my document back to that. Hey!
This is kind of a downer, by the way. So.
It is a little bit. You know, we've been talking about exoplanets. Last week we talked about the discovery of a star that has weird light fluctuations that don't seem to be the same type of fluctuations you'd have in light, that like a planet passing in front of it or something like that. Talk that it could be a Dyson sphere. Perhaps there's aliens out there with advanced technology harvesting energy from their dying sun. But this story kind of puts the wet blanket on that theory. PopSci.com says aliens might just not exist yet.
Wah, wah, wah.
Oh, sorry, let's yeah. The world is in a tizzy over the mysterious fluctuations astronomers are seeing in light from a distant star. While those variations could turn out to have perfectly non-alien explanation, the excitement over them shows just how badly we want there to be other civilizations in the universe. Now, a study published this week in Monthly Notices of the Royal Astronomical Society.
Oh yeah, I need to renew my subscription to that.
Oh, I've had a subscription for years now. No, not really. Suggests that our loneliness is only temporary. If human civilization manages to hang on for several billion years, I like this in parentheses, unlikely, but we're an optimistic bunch, then we might just see other planets with other civilizations. The researchers from NASA's Space Telescope Science Institute looked at data from telescopes like the Hubble and Kepler to get a better idea of how galaxies, planets, and solar systems form. Using those observations and computer models, they calculated that Earth is only in the first 8% of all Earth-like planets that will ever form. That's right, 92% of Earth-like, aka habitable with liquid water on the surface planets, haven't even been formed yet.
Oh.
Wait, hang on.
You know, it doesn't mean we can't stop trying to find them, or it shouldn't mean that we should stop trying to explore the galaxy and look for extraterrestrial life.
No, not even a little bit. We definitely need to keep doing that. Our main motivation was understanding the Earth's place in the context of the rest of the universe, author Peter Baruzzi said in a statement. Compared to all the planets that will ever form in the universe, the Earth is actually quite early. Because it is so early, the researchers think it is highly unlikely that we are the only planet that will ever develop intelligent life. In the paper, Baruzi and his co-author, Molly Peoples, write, assuming that gas cooling and star formation continues, the Earth formed before 92% of similar planets that the universe will form. This implies a below 8% chance. No,
it's above 8%.
Above, I'm sorry, less than, greater than.
Yep.
Greater than 8% chance that we are the only civilization the universe will ever have. Those are pretty good odds that we aren't quite alone. We might just need some patience to finally make first contact.
But, you know, still, 8% on the cosmic scale is still a lot of planets, right?
Yeah, I would say so. But that also kind of implies that we're probably very far spread apart from each other. That
yeah,
some of the older galaxies that they're seeing, which we're seeing millions of years in the past, those civilizations may have come and gone. They may just be starting now, but we're not going to see that for a while because it takes that distance for light to travel to us.
Brad, why did you give us such a downer?
Because you said to me, "Hey, you should take this story, Brad. It's pretty cool." And now you're gonna, now that's what I get now.
I don't think "it's pretty cool" was in that conversation. And I think I said, "Do either of you want this story?"
Ah, yeah, you're right. You're right. I tried to deflect and make you the bad guy in this tale, and I apologize.
Well, now I want some chocolate. I want some chocolate now.
Chocolate and a hug is what it sounds like you need.
I know.
Are you on your period?
Maybe men get them too, sort of.
Well, actually, yeah, they do.
Yeah.
So they have their own monthly
man cycle.
It's not exactly the same thing, though.
No, it's not, but they get their own version of things with the hormones and the whatnot. So.
Yeah. Well,
less of the whatnot, but more of the hormones and.
This is.
Hey, what's our next story, Dave?
Okay. Yeah, let's move on. It's getting weird in here, and that story's depressing. But it's good to know that someday, in a few billion years, we'll be able to meet other people in the universe.
Yay!
How about fiction? If it's not going to come true in our lifetime, in real life, in factual, let's try the fiction. Avatar comic book series in development at Dark Horse. As per the Hollywood Reporter, James Cameron presented the news via a video presentation during the recent New York Comic Con panel for Avatar 2, because James is hard at work on Avatar 2, the sequel to the original Avatar from 2008. There's actually a few of them in the works, but you got to work on 2 first. Even with 3 sequels in the works, we still have more stories we want to tell. So Lightstorm will be working in partnership with Dark Horse. Lightstorm, Dark Horse, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
To reveal new storylines from the past, present, and future world of Avatar, explained Cameron. The report also states that it is possible some of the new locations, characters, and events that take place in the new comic books may appear in Avatar 2 and its follow-up films. Expanding the cinematic universe of Avatar using both films and comic books is not new, as both Man of Steel and even the TV series Heroes had their own tie-in comic books. See, they're doing that all the time now. It's a very, very common thing. In fact, Star Wars is doing the hell out of that. They've got a bunch of different books, a bunch of different titles, right, Brad? Am I correct? They've got one for, like, Darth Vader. There's a Han Solo book, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they're milking that for all they possibly can. Yeah.
The Star Wars marketing blitz is out of hand. It's out of hand. Like, you go down the produce aisle, like the canned produce, and I saw some vegetables with Star Wars on it. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's everywhere. It's like, oh, buy some Star Wars Doritos. Buy some Star Wars, like, I don't know, socks.
No, any.
Which, yeah, they do have Star Wars socks, but
any space.
Yeah, it's on just about anything and everything that you can get your hands on, including like kitchen gadgets like egg timers and measuring cups.
Yeah, any space that has room for any kind of Star Wars logo, character picture, anything, they put it on it these days.
It's great advertising.
Yeah. So the Dark Horse Comics Avatar tie-in series has no official release date as of the time being. However, Avatar 2 is scheduled for release late 2017, with Avatar 3 following in 2018, and Avatar 4 in 2019. So I believe that James Cameron is working on all three of them at this, or will be working on all three of them at the same time.
Yay!
Which is smart, because your actors get old. Look at the look at how big of a difference. Speaking of Star Wars, look at how big of a difference between the original Episode 4 and Episode 5. They aged quite a bit, and actually, what's his face? Luke Skywalker.
Mark Hamill
got in that motorcycle accident, right? So he had some work done on his face.
Yep.
Did they ever explain that in the story, why he looked a little bit different?
No,
I don't think so.
Okay. Nope.
I thought maybe they did.
Life. Stuff happened.
Are you guys excited about the Avatar tie-in comics? I know, Brad, you don't really collect books anymore, but would you go out... And if it was interesting enough, would you go out and get one?
Maybe a trade paperback that has the entire story, but yeah, I might do that.
What do you think they could do with the Avatar comic book series? Like, what's it going to follow? What character is it going to follow? Will it follow the Na'vi, or will it follow the humans?
I would imagine. Well, they might end up having it to where it bounces back and forth between the Na'vi and the humans.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's probably a lot going on, and rather than give you like one side of the story, be like, oh, and then this happened to so and so, and then you go back to the Na'vi and kind of show like the events kind of leading up to that certain point, and then of course the timelines kind of like divert and they go do different things for a while, and you know they keep intersecting at random times. But yeah, I would imagine that they should anyway. Include kind of both sides of the story. That's kind of how, well, I guess in a way, like some of the other stuff that I've read, it'll kind of focus on a character for a little while and then it'll jump back to another character for a little while. And so I'd imagine that's probably how it should go with Avatar, because I think it'd be probably not as interesting if you're only following like one side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be like, oh, how did this happen? How did they manage to get all this done? What, you know, you'd leave a lot more questions than answers. So they'd have to incorporate both sides somehow, I think, at least to some extent.
I'm just wondering what more they're going to do in the Avatar universe. Like, what new elements will they be adding? Because the first movie was pretty much a theatrical, hey, this is what could happen on our planet, or this is what has happened on our planet. When you mess with the environment and indigenous people. Now, what is next? What is the next message that they're going to, you know, incorporate into this universe? That's what I want to know.
No, it's a very good question.
I guess James Cameron is the only person that knows.
That freaking guy.
Whoever's doing all the drawing and writing. The artist, I think, would have some idea.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm
sure. These stories tell some sort of picture. I should, you know, maybe see what the dialogue is.
No, James Cameron does everything. He draws, he writes, he's working on the...
That would be really impressive if he, like, sat there and illustrated the comic books. I really doubt that he would, but that I would be really impressed.
Maybe
that
he clones himself.
Those comic books would be done in 2025, then.
Yeah. All right, there you go. Avatar comic book series on the way. Look for it in stores sometime in the future. I'm not going to say near future because that I could be wrong by saying that.
2025.
All right, Anessa, let's round up the news with your story.
All right. So, you know, the whole presidential election here in the United States is coming up, 2016. Woo!
Yay!
So... As Brad mentioned earlier, you know, we were talking about the discovery of an unexplained mass of objects swirling around a distant star. And someone that sparked an idea of how would some of the current presidential candidates handle the existence of alien, like the knowledge that aliens exist.
So
there's several of them, and I'm going to let you guys do the choosing as far as who you'd like to hear what they would sound like.
Okay. So
it may or may not sound like the person. It's just like imitating, like, this is how they may react.
Okay, so this is the authors of the article that you got this from. This is their interpretation of what they think the presidential each presidential candidate would react to the existence, the all of a sudden announcement that aliens exist.
Yep.
Okay, gotcha.
Yep, yep. So give me a name.
I'm going to start
with Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, I'm going to say Bernie Sanders, too. That's my favorite so far.
All right, so Bernie Sanders, Vermont senator. We have a sickness in this galaxy, and its name is inequality. These aliens possess technology so advanced they are, to our eyes, indistinguishable from magic. Yet the American middle class hasn't seen real wages since the 1970s. Why is it that only 1% of the things in the universe can go 99% of the speed of light? I say it's time for these aliens, whose existence I only just learned about, to pay their fair share.
See, I like Bernie Sanders most of the time, but I don't like his interpretation here. He seems to be anti-alien, which I'm against.
I think he would be like more accepting of the aliens.
I think you're right too.
Than some, I mean, I could totally be wrong, but my guess would be he would be a bit more accepting of the knowledge that there are extraterrestrials.
The people that wrote this are kind of like putting the aliens in the role of like corporations or something like that. That's what it sounds like what they did.
At least for this particular person. So Brad, give me a person.
Hillary Clinton.
All right. Some may see our first contact with aliens as a threat. I see it as an opportunity. When I was First Lady, I took the initiative to reach out to the aliens and begin work on a groundbreaking collaboration between our two species. Back in the 1990s, when a pair of meddling FBI agents started poking into our efforts, breeding a race of alien-human hybrids that may be somehow involved bees, my memory is a little hazy on the exact specifics of what happened, especially in the later seasons. But what's important here is that we should all welcome our new alien overlords.
That's so perfect. I love it.
Oh, how about the Donald?
Yeah.
The Donald. All right. We need to deport every single illegal alien on this planet to ensure they don't take the jobs from hardworking humans, spread space madness, and rape our women, assuming the aliens don't reproduce asexually. Yes, I was talking about aliens from outer space this whole time. I was saying we should build a wall around the Earth's atmosphere to keep their flying saucers out. You all... But I was talking about human beings from Latin America. Oh, wow. No, wonder everyone thought I was a racist. I would never say any of that stuff about another human being, regardless of their country of origin. I'm sure glad we got all that cleared up. Now, who wants cake?
I'm sure they're good people. I mean, I've met a few nice aliens.
Some of them are good.
All right, let's round out the major candidates with I guess
Huckleberry Hound.
I guess Mike Huckabee is a bigger candidate, but let's go with Jeb Bush first.
Okay, so Jeb Bush and then Mike Huckabee.
Yes,
Huckleberry. Okay, Jeb Bush. I don't know, guys. Just tell me what you want to say. Trump, Carson, Fiorina, all of those clowns who are beating me in the polls right now are just going to try to immediately blow up the aliens and get us all killed in the process. I won't do that, I promise. I'll really try hard not to be solely responsible for the extinction of the human race. Is that what you want to hear? If it is, then I'm your man. It's not what you want to hear? You want someone who will pledge to show these aliens how tough we are by detonating a nuclear bomb in their big dumb faces? Do you know if it's even possible to detonate a nuclear bomb in open space? You don't care. Fine, whatever. I'll do that. If that's what you want, I'll do that.
Okay. Good job. Yeah, all right. Now let's hear Huckleby.
I'm looking for Huckleby. For Huckabee. I just want to call him Huckleby.
Actually, next I want to hear Ted Cruz.
They don't see that was the first person I looked for, and they don't have Ted Cruz. So I can't poke fun at him. I'm sad. Why am I not? Okay, there he is. All right, Mike Huckabee. The one thing I know is that alien-human marriage is an abomination. It is against God's law and shouldn't be tolerated. This sort of extremely sinful, extremely erotic copulation between man and monster has no place in our society. In this folder that I am holding in my hand right now, I have over 300 pages of hentai tentacle porn images from my own personal collection of obscene fetish material, which is horrible and that I hate. We should, as a species, spend the next 5 hours going over every one of these images, generously lingering over each salacious, exciting picture, until we are all well aware of the moral dangers we will soon face. So Mike Huckabee's into hentai, huh?
I like Ben Carson's is so short. I will blow up all the aliens because I have the hardest steel nerves of a brain surgeon. Carly.
And apparently Carly Fiorina will, she says, I will blow up all the aliens because I have the hardest steel nerves of someone who used to tell other people how to make printers.
They're not even trying with her on that one.
They're not even trying with her. Yeah, they just like copy and paste from Ben Carson. And what did she do? Printers? Okay, fine.
All right. So if you guys want to see the rest of these, we'll put the link in the show notes and you can see what the rest of the candidates' views are on aliens.
Let us know what you think. If you think that maybe Donald Trump would have said something different or Hillary would have reacted differently.
Or
let us know that too.
Or, you know, based on their views on aliens, who would you vote for? Not in the real world. Actual reality, but based on these,
not reality.
Let us know.
Vote based on reality. That's ridiculous.
Brad, what's the email address?
galacticnetcasts@gmail.com.
Anessa, what's the voicemail?
Numbers and stuff.
Starts with 805.
You go down to the bottom of the page.
I'm looking.
805.
I know it's like 328-3966.
Oh, it's not on the page anymore.
Yeah, it's right
above sightings. It's right below the article.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. You restructured it. Never mind.
How many episodes? 166? You guys can't remember the voicemail?
You know what? I did remember the 328 as I was going through the document, and then I found the last four digits. So I'm like halfway there.
No, I forget it once in a while too. So
I do three shows for this network, and I do the I've seen and read the numbers all the time. Do I remember it? No.
So let us know. Let us know who you would vote for. All right, let's do this. Hey, you said sightings. Hey, let's do the damn sightings.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black triangular, three-dimensional shape, huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a zone. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
All right, this is our section where we highlight a moment in history, a moment in time where somebody saw something that may or may not have been alien. And Brad, it's your turn to do that this week. What'd you bring us?
I brought nothing.
What?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I brought us metallic triangle UFOs. Actually, just a singular one. This is actually from UFOSightingsDaily.com. And this was a sighting on September 22nd, so a month ago. And this was a metallic triangle UFO over Sydney, Australia. Now, I am going to get some picture stuff ready to go here. So when I do my screen share, the folks that check us out on YouTube can see what we're actually talking about here. Okay, the report starts out. At first, I thought this could be a government project like Aurora or the TR-3B, but its shape is not a perfect triangle. However, its center orb does light up when powering up for high speed. The UFO does have a white glow at its center and on the wingtip in one photo. These photos are huge, 2.3 megabytes in size, and deliver some great detail. This is pure alien tech here. And that's a note from Scott C. Waring. All right. The eyewitness for this particular encounter states, After locking my telescope observatory, I walked down the side of my home to check my plants for watering, at which time I looked skyward to check for rain when I saw an object that resembled a large piece of aluminum fluttering in the distance. I watched this object for 30 to 40 seconds before running inside to grab my camera, which is a Canon 400D with a 300 millimeter zoom lens, and then running out the back door, hoping it would stay on the same heading. It did, and I was able to find it pretty quickly again. I watched it move left, right, descend, and ascend at will with no turning circle at all. It just diagonally changes. Direct directional changes of up to 180 degrees at a time with no speed loss before slowing, at which time I engaged the image stabilizer on the camera and took four shots, all within 10 seconds. After the fourth images, it changed direction by 180 degrees and ascended into the clouds. I watched that area of the sky for the next hour and a half, I think he's trying to say, with no joy, after which time I went inside to check the images to find an object unlike anything I've seen or researched, training to be a pilot in my younger years. I'm an astronomer and have not submitted these images until now because an astronomer may be seen as someone looking for aliens, which is not the case. I'm an astrophotographer now. I'm going to do a screen share so folks can see what the heck we're talking about here.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So this is what's going on here. There's blow-ups here of these were like really high-quality photos that were taken, 2.3 megabytes in file size, which...
Their 10.1 megapixel resolution camera, yeah. The Canon.
So here we go. Starting with the first couple of photos, there's the clouds, and there is off to the side, there is a blow up in the lower right hand corner of what the vehicle looks like. And it does look like a triangle if you took two of the tips and sort of swept it back in kind of a aerodynamic fashion. These aren't hard edges at all. They are all rounded and smoothed off.
It looks like they're the U.S. military's first attempt at a stealth plane. Have you ever seen those pictures of those planes?
Oh, yeah, I have.
Actually. Sort of like those.
You know, this shape almost reminds me of the insignia on the patches for the Enterprise.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It does.
So it's kind of got that. There aren't sharp points on this, just to make that abundantly clear. Where you would imagine in a triangle sharp corners would be, they are completely rounded off. And it's not like an equilateral triangle either. It almost looks like a fattened letter A with rounded edges. And the open area is where the lighted orb, as they describe earlier in this, and it's just flying around, and yeah, those are the expanded views. Because that camera does take high quality pictures, they were able to. Now, granted, when you blow something up that is tiny, you get a little bit of fuzziness, but. Those are pretty decent pictures, I think, for what was going on at the time.
Either that's an actual alien spacecraft or a very fancy drone.
Yeah. Because they do mention that this thing it went back off into the clouds, there's no way that you would get a like a personal drone, you know, like an RC drone with like an RC plane or something like that. It would lose range very quickly if it were, you know, like a handheld remote control system. It would have to be a much bigger and more powerful transmitter to control something like that if it were going to go to that altitude.
All right. Is that pretty much it for these? Or you want to?
That's pretty much it. And we'll have the link in the show notes so that if you are only seeing this or only hearing this in audio version and not seeing it on YouTube, then you would have a chance to be able to take a look yourself.
And you don't actually have to go to our YouTube channel. I keep on forgetting to mention this. We always have our videos up as well on our website, gncasts.com. We have a section called Live. And we have for each show that we do, when we record the show, we do it live over the internet where you can watch. And we always have a web page that you can go see us either watch live or later. So just go to the website, gncasts.com, and click on where it says live, and you can watch it there. All right, Brad, that was very good. I'm freaked out by those. I think that's definitive proof that aliens do exist right there in those pictures.
Well, I don't know if it's definitive proof, but those are spectacular photos.
Okay, let's move on to our picks. These are things that we have watched, listened to, played, what else? Read, concerning extraterrestrial beings in our galaxy or in our universe. And Anessa, you've got you're up first.
Yes, and it is very, very short. today during lunch, I managed to squeeze in a short story. And it is called UFO by John Paul Smith. And it's part of a small ebook on Amazon that has, I believe it's 4 short stories, which the book name is UFO. And then there's a short story in it called UFO. And so that's the only one that I really had a chance to read. I started reading the next one, but I didn't have time to continue. I had to go back from lunch. Oh, darn, that whole employment thing. So yeah, the UFO is about a guy who just got off of work, and he worked a shift, not maybe like second shift. Anyway, he got home fairly late. And so by the time he got home, it was dark, and he noticed there were these lights in the sky. And he's like, huh, must be an airplane. But then he started watching these lights, and they were in a circular formation. And he was watching them, and then he thought, oh, I need to get my camera. So he had his cell phone, and he snapped a few pictures, shot some video, and he called his neighbor after about 20, 30 minutes to let him know to come outside, because he knew that his neighbor worked the same shift or a similar shift, so he'd still be awake. And he wanted witnesses, because he was like, I need more people to see this. And so the neighbor comes out, and he's watching it, and he's like, oh, wow. You know, like it's an unidentified flying object. And the story is just kind of about this experience of witnessing a UFO and having more people, like passersby and other people that live within the neighborhood or the apartments, like venture outwards to witness this sight. And just kind of talks about like their reactions. So yeah, I'm going to leave it at that. There is a bit of a surprise, but it is really short. It's maybe like 5 pages long. And, so yeah, it's available on Amazon for 99 cents, or if you have Kindle Unlimited, then you can read it for free. Well, I say for free, but there's a $10 a month subscription fee, or you can pay for it in a 6-month stretch or a year stretch. But anyway, if you happen to have Kindle Unlimited, you've got like 4 short stories to read. I've only read the first one. The second one takes place in the future, and the Navy goes out into space as opposed to on the ocean, or at least they do both. That I can tell you about the next short story. Yeah, it was an interesting, quick little read. I had read another short story before that, and I was very unimpressed. So this one's much, much better.
I find that the same way when I'm looking for short films, like on YouTube or Vimeo, where you have to sit through a couple of stinkers to get to a good one sometimes.
Yeah. And the first one that I read, I think like a young kid, like very young, like just starting to read, might have enjoyed it. But I was not impressed.
All right. What's the name of the actual, that story is called UFO, but what's the name of the series of short stories? What's it called?
UFO.
Oh, it is. Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry.
Yes. I mentioned that UFO was in a book called UFO.
Okay. Sorry.
It's okay. There's a lot of UFOs being thrown around. You never know. So yeah, UFO was in the book title of the same title.
Okay.
And the other 4 stories are not called UFO. So spoiler alert, they have different titles.
Are they all science fiction related somehow though?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
It's a little sci-fi, compilation of sci-fi short stories, but it's very small. I think like 4 or 5 short stories total.
Excellent. Brad, while we wait for my water heater to stop working, can you do yours first? I know I'm next on the lineup, but
sure.
I hate having that noise in the background.
Yeah. My pick is loosely related to aliens. My pick was the latest episode of The Flash. And the reason why is because for those of you who have been watching The Flash in second season, a singularity had been created at the end of the first season due to events that took place. And what has ended up happening is there are wormholes that have opened up around Central City that will allow them to be able to jump to other Earths. And they had to work with some strange particles to actually get these things to stabilize so that they could actually move through at least one of these portals. And if the way the 52 universes sort of work, there is, especially when you get the Speed Force into play, there are a couple of alien-like planets that are accessible through that are accessible if you can use the Speed Force. One of those would be the Bizarro world, where everybody is sort of a backwards representation of human life. So they are humanoid, but they speak in negatives, but it means something positive. Or if they say something positive, it means something negative. But there's also some creatures that feed off of the Speed Force. And I can't remember the name of the race.
It's going to be interesting to see if they go to these other worlds. I know they're going to go to Earth 2 specifically, for sure, but if they use the, what did they call it? The device, or the thing that they modified the portal, but what they call it is something, there was a name for what they built, what Jay Garrick built, Brad. What was it called?
Oh, I can't remember. It was very complex.
But there was a wormhole.
Yeah, but no, the name that they chose seemed very comic booky. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't remember what they called it.
It's like the something rocket. That's not it, but it's sort of like it. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if...
There we go. It's a... Well, I want a blow up of the...
Isn't it something canon?
Yeah, it's canon.
Oh, a speed cannon.
Yeah.
Okay, they're called... I am going to... I'm going to share the screen here and explain this. Okay. So here are... There we go. Here are all of the 52 Earths, at least at this particular point in time in the way the multiverse is structured. Okay. The speed force is the ring, the orange ring around everything. This whole outer rim is the speed force, and that's kind of the buffer zone between what's beyond our particular universe. But if we look down here, there is an alien race, and they're, I don't even know how to, the quiz, K-W-Y-Z-Z, and they are actually, they either feed off of it or are a part of the speed force. They're incredibly fast, I know that. And they are actually an older, they showed up, I think, in the Silver Age of comics. I think that's our first meeting of them. But yeah, so it is possible to use the speed force and actually meet a race of beings that are not like us at all. So there you go.
We'll see if
and
they...
that's kind of why I chose this, because there is a definite possibility that they could run into something like this.
That would be a new dynamic for the show, because they've dealt with time travel. They've dealt with, you know, alternative or parallel dimensions like the other worlds.
Yep.
You bring aliens in, that's a whole new dimension.
But here, Earth 29 is the bizarro world.
The one that looks like it's a square or a cube.
It's a cube, yeah.
Okay.
So there are distinct possibilities to meeting beings outside of our own. I mean, we're definitely going to do interdimensional travel. That's just a thing that's going to happen. And in fact, with the end of the recent episode, Family of Rogues, that was just aired, there's some interesting things that are somebody came through the stabilized portal.
Yeah.
From Earth 2. So
somebody that we may already know.
Quite possibly.
Yeah.
So
now that was a great episode, Brad. I love the Cisco and Golden Glider interactions.
What's interesting, at least back when I read comic books, Golden Glider was killed. So she was dead. So it's kind of interesting to see, to have her be alive. And you know, in the old comics, Golden Glider and Captain Cold were a team. But what he did is she was a skater. That was her power. She had like super sharp skates and she had a skating motif, and he would, you know, like shoot ice and give her an area in which to skate in. He could, you know, like Iceman created like ice slides and stuff like that. And that's how he traveled in X-Men. Captain Cold kind of did the exact same thing. He would create a frozen path for her to skate on. So
I like how the CW Arrow Flashverse, they've changed it to make it a little bit more cooler, because some of that Golden Age and Silver Age stuff is pretty hokey.
It is very hokey.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Brad. That's The Flash, yep. Family of Rogues, and the possible alien connection somewhere down the line. And I want to continue that with another possible alien connection. My pick this week is barely alien related. Yours was a little bit. Mine's also a little bit possibly related. It's Fargo Season 2, the TV show Fargo Season 2. And I wasn't planning really to watch it. The movie was good. I liked it. I didn't see Season 1 of the TV show with the Billy Bob Thornton and those guys. But I heard that each season is going to be different. Like, it's kind of like American Horror Story or some other serialized, not serialized. What's the word I'm looking for? Yeah, maybe serialized.
Yeah.
Where they do each season's a different story, but with maybe a couple of the same characters. This is completely in a different time period than the first season. It actually takes place, I believe, in 1979.
Mm.
And it takes place in Fargo, or the Fargo area. Also takes place in the Luverne, Minnesota, and Sioux Falls, South Dakota area. Places where I have lived. I've lived there. So, at the end of the... And for those of you that don't want to be spoiled, go ahead and turn us off. I hate that you have to do that, but if you don't want to be spoiled by the description of the first episode of season two of Fargo, then just turn it off, turn us off, and thank you. So, it's, like I said before, it's barely alien-related, but at the very end of the first episode of Fargo season two, one of the main characters, it's not going to be much of a spoiler, but if you don't want the alien part spoiled, I guess you can turn us off. But at the very end, one of the main characters actually sees an unidentified flying object in the sky. Like, it's obviously a UFO that he sees. And then something bad happens to him. The end of episode two of season two, it ends with the narration that you will hear at the beginning of the movie. What's it called? What's the one that was based on the radio play, which was based on the H.G. Wells invasion?
War of the Worlds?
War of the Worlds, thank you. The movie from the 1950s, there's that kind of voiceover at the very beginning of it. Kind of sets up the story a little bit. Well, that is played over the very end of season or episode two of season two of Fargo. So there's definitely, they're hinting at something. Aliens are involved somehow, but then there's all this other stuff going on. Like, there's crime, people dying, there's cops. It's very much Fargo-ish. Like, if you love the movie Fargo, you'll like the series a lot because they're basically a series of movies. In fact, they're longer than an average TV show episode. It's like an hour and 12 minutes or something like that.
Hmm.
So that is my pick. It's Fargo Season 2. It's on FX, or I'm sure you can get it elsewhere as well.
Cool.
Okay, there you go. Those are our picks, and that is another episode of The Alien Invasion. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you in advance or if you're already a subscriber, thank you. If you're not yet, please do so. Go to gncasts.com and click on subscribe or search for us on iTunes and Stitcher. We're at both places. Of course, you can leave us feedback by emailing galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Call our voicemail number, 805-328-3966. We also invite you to check out all the other podcasts on the Galactic Netcast Network, including the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. We've got Podcast of Terror, Weird World Weekly. We've got Adventure Party, Brad's podcast, and we've got all the smaller ones like the Who New and Review, and we've got Galactic Gaming News, and they're all there at gncasts.com. Anything else I should add before we get out of here?
Peeps? Nope.
Okay. Well, on that note, one more thing. It's the Galactic Collective. If you want to be part of a community of listeners and help us make decisions, help us decide on the future of things here at Galactic Netcasts, go to gncasts.com and click on Join the Galactic Collective, and all the details will be there. Now it's time to get out of here. Before we do, though, final thoughts. Brad, you're up first.
They're doing some great things with The Flash, and granted it's not alien-related, but I'm telling you, something's going to happen more with the Speed Force. It's going to open up some doors, and we might get some aliens here pretty soon.
My pick next week might be something from the Berlanti universe. Yeah. Stay tuned. It's a little tease for next week.
Ho-ho.
Okay, Anessa, your final thought.
I had one, and then I forgot it. Whenever you're like, oh, Galactic Collective. So I'm like, there goes my final thought.
Sorry.
That's okay. So
Tune in next week to find out what Anessa's final thought was from this week that she forgot.
See if I remember.
All right. So thanks for listening, everybody. And until next week, we will talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Who Review, episode number 5, The Girl Who Died. So, did you notice we started this episode with the tolling of the cloister bell? Now, I don't know whether this is significant, but we have heard the cloister bell toll quite a lot. Now, this only usually happens in times of utmost peril, and truthfully, the doctor didn't look like he was in that much peril. And neither did Clara. Well, aside from a brain-sucking spider inside her spacesuit. Oh yeah, and she was sort of floating. Clara was sort of lost in space! Still, we get a little bit of the Doctor's witticisms as he materialises around her, and then has to squish a spider, and then pop outside to scrape his boot. It's these little almost comedy asides, these little suggestions of things we weren't privy to, I think adds to great excitement, but also suggests to me that the Doctor's taking a few risks with Clara. Surely this will never do, especially when we got that shot of her lovely brown eyes, and I was thinking to myself, I actually quite like Clara now. What? Really? Yeah, really. I'm sort of beginning to appreciate her. This episode was a nice tonal change from the 4 episodes we've had. It's felt much lighter, even though as soon as the Doctor popped outside the TARDIS, we got the Viking attack. But that did lead to the end of those stupid sunglasses. It seems the Vikings weren't that stupid because they were able to pull them off his face and snap them. Now, when we first saw these Vikings, I was thinking, these Vikings aren't the Vikings from the show Vikings. They're not the most fearsome warlike bunch. But if history teaches us anything, it's that the Doctor always seems to meet the slightly camper versions. The Monty Python versions, we'll call them. As for the Monty Python versions, well, that sort of happened, didn't it? Come on, admit it. You thought so too. After the Doctor's speech about I'm Odin, and then we get the giant godhead appear? I don't think you could get much more British than that of a representation of a god. I was half expecting Michael Palin to pop out and go, what are you staring at, lad? Marching up and down the square? Still, the soldiers, the ironclad soldiers appeared, and they were hulkish brutes, weren't they? I'm not quite sure that they worked as well as, say, the Jadoon work. These were just, I don't know, they looked like mini submarines, if you asked me. But I'll come on to those later, probably. So we then get the brilliant little piece between Ashilda and Clara, as Clara teaches Ashilda how to use advanced technology. Granted, it's a snapped in half sonic, half chronic sunglass thing. Still works though, which is probably just as well. And because of this technology, it's nice to see that they got teleported onto Valhalla. No objection with it being called Valhalla. If I had a spaceship, that's what I'd call it too. Now, we then got a nice little scene from Star Wars. No? The trash compactor? Forcing people... come on. That's Star Wars, yeah? Absolutely. That's what I thought too. When we get to meet testosterone-supping Odin, he pleasantly conjured up a sort of mishmash of bad guys from the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, And a TV show that you might not be familiar with called Nightmare. If you're not, look it up. I might even pop a little note in the show note. And then we get Clara's speech. Very, very sort of doctorish the way she presented that. And it's a sound argument. You know, have a look at this. You don't really want a mess, do you? You don't know what you're getting into. And then Ashilda decided to grow a backbone and was just like, yeah, come away, village. We're going to kick you, right? Oh dear, that's all a bit bad, isn't it? Although I did quite like the dynamic. Having two powerful women on screen, it's something that we should have more of in science fiction, in Doctor Who in general. I liked when they were returned and we got the Doctor's little speech about farmers, fishermen and web designers. Now, I'm fairly certain I know a couple of web designers. I wonder what they thought of that. Speaking as an IT technician, I didn't take too much exception. Only joking. So we then get a nice little bit of how the Doctor's going to turn these hapless individuals into a fighting force. And we get that with the only kind of montage that the Doctor can do. And that's a few one-liners, bit of visual humour, the accidental burning of a village. I think it's absolutely fantastic, especially as the Doctor and Clara are the only ones to raise their hand to the question of swordplay. It's nice the way that we get the little take on religion, the Doctor's take on religion. And then they go and spoil it all by stupid talking babies. And I take exception to talking babies. I did back when we had Craig's episodes. Although I suppose if we're going to run across a baby that's called Stormageddon, it should be in a Viking episode. Sadly misplaced. We then get the ending, the whole point of Ashilda, the storyteller. There's little snippets there, the electric eels. I don't know why Vikings keep electric eels, but I like the fact that they'd created a rudimentary electromagnet. I liked little bits like that. I liked them playing quoits on the antenna or whatever they were. It seems that the Maya, though, truthfully, in my opinion, were a little bit surplus. They're not a baddie that we're going to see again. It could have been giant space kittens. This episode, where this episode won, is about the metaphors of what is happening. And that's the thing that pretty much excited me. To quote the Doctor, winning is all about looking happier than the other guy. And that's what this was all about. It was all about putting on the face. It's all about hidden behind a mask almost. Although, don't get me wrong, I actually enjoyed the actual mechanics of the win, the storytelling, the puppetry. I like the Doctor's advice. I like some of the one-liners. I liked, you know, little twists here and there. I also liked the fact that we got to hear reverse the polarity of the neutron flow. Now, I'm saying it like that deliberately because I like the fact that the Doctor rubbishes it and goes, basically, I have no idea what it means. It just makes me sound clever. It was the third Doctor's clever specs, if you know what I mean. However, I actually felt genuinely sad when the girl who died. It's not often that the Doctor gets angry like that. It's not often that we see a death which I care about in Doctor Who. Oh, that makes me sound callous. I liked the little speech about the ripples and the tidal waves. And then I liked the revelation of why he's got that face. I thought it was nice to see Doctor Ten again. Genuinely nice to see him again. And then I liked the almost Waters of Mars, Time Lord Victorious, the I'm the Doctor and I save people. And then we get the woman who died, no longer died. We get the second mention of the hybrid. Now, I don't know whether that's going to be a red herring or not. We heard Davros mention it. We've heard this mentioned now by the Doctor himself. By creating someone with the curse of immortality, it doesn't necessarily mean we've created the hybrid. I thought it was a nice touch that Ashilda got to have a different token. But I don't think that we're in a Captain Jack scenario. He was a different kind. He was a fixed point in time. I do think we're entering something unique. And I do think we will see her again. I know we're going to see her again next week in The Girl Who Lived, but I also think we're going to see her again. And I think next time we do, that she might not be so happy. Just my thoughts. Now, I did mention the curse of immortality. Would you want to be immortal? No. Neither would I. I like the fact that we have got two-parters. I like the fact that we're building to this. Now, I've been thinking about the series arc. And I think the series arc is all about masks. It's all about the metaphors. It's all about seeing things that aren't there. That's the illusion. They're not real. We have got the illusion of immortality. We've got the illusion of the way the Doctor duped Davros. We have got a few. We've got a few hints that more than anything, this is about duping people. This is about changing perception of people. I don't know. I'd be keen to hear what you think. Anyway, I've rambled on for far too long as it is. So maybe you can join me next time for The Girl Who Lives. Why don't you check out the links that Dave puts up? I've included loads of photos, loads of things like that. Also links, embedded links to YouTube clips. I think you should find it all quite splendid. I know I do. See you next week. This Galactic Netbite has been brought to you by ImperialSteam.com. Why not follow me on Twitter at ImperialGnome? Email me at ImperialGnome@gmail.com. Or look me up on Facebook. Or just ask my Galactic Netcast friends how to contact me.
You have been listening to a production of Galactic Netcasts. For more about the show you just listened to, including how to subscribe and give us feedback, plus additional podcasts from the Galactic Network, daily news features, videos, links to our social networks, and more, go to gncasts.com. That's gncasts.com.